All right, so this is writing two for March 5th. Next week, no class. We have spring break. So, like, the next time we will meet is going to be 2 weeks from now. So we're hopefully starting, we need to be starting writing this week. So you can see up here on the board a couple of things that we are need to be done. Lunsford 20. Chapter 20 is on using sources. So this has got a, this is basically just for reference. I really would encourage you to read it as you're getting started with writing, because there's some really, really great things that I particularly want you to pay attention to. A couple of things they talk about in here that as we're synthesizing information, we basically have three primary ways that we are including our information from our sources into our paper. The first one is synthesis, and we've been talking about. So the synthesis part is where you're taking this critical mass of information that you've been reading and everything, you're making your own connections. And then that's the synthesis. The synthesis is you. It's your thoughts, your connections, the things that you want to say. Okay, so that there's that part of it. But to incorporate the sources, you can summarize, there's paraphrasing, summarizing, and quoting are basically the three things. And those are all three of those are things that we have to cite. Now, the direct quotations, I mean, those are the ones that are obvious. We know that when we're going to put something word for word out of one of our sources, we're going to put it into quotation marks, and that is going to obviously going to have that parenthetical citation at the end. Okay, that one we usually don't miss. The other two, the paraphrasing and the summarizing, gets a little bit more tricky. So what's the difference between paraphrasing and summarizing? Are you guys familiar with that term?
Paraphrasing, isn't it like when you use specific words that they use, but you don't, like that, it would be a quote if it was directly from the text.
Yeah.
But paraphrasing is like some of the things, possibly not like the things taken out. Summarizing is just your
okay. Close. I would maybe make the distinction a little bit differently. Anybody else have anything you want to add to that? Difference between paraphrasing and summarizing?
I thought they were just synonymous.
Okay. So I think what you're talking about, Caleb, is something when we have quotations, we do have called complete quotations, which is like an entire sentence at a time. Sometimes you have longer quotations, which may even be a couple of sentences, although one of the things I guess we'll need to talk about like when we come back with you is there is some when we quote something that's going to take up four lines or longer in our text, like if you're doing, we call that a block quote. And a block quote has to be like instead of just indenting like we normally do for a paragraph, if you've got a block quote, it gets set off completely by the entire quote being blocked and the entire quote being indented. So your margins for that would look like you have like your regular paragraph like this, and then you have your quote, which would actually, you'd have multiple lines of the quote that would look like that. And then you go back to continuing your paragraph, where this is you is like set up the block quote, and then down here is explain the block quote. Kind of idea and show how it fits into the main point that you're making. But this is this formatting right here, that's called our block quote. And the thing about block quote that gets a little bit confusing is one, the way we format it takes the place of having to use quotation marks. So a block quote like this does not actually have quotation marks. The formatting does that for us. And then when you get to the end, instead of doing, like normally we would do like end the quotation marks, put their parentheses, and then put the period. Since we don't have the quotation marks anymore, we go ahead and put the period, and then we put the parentheses after it. That's the only time that you ever put the period here and then the parentheses, and not the period after the parentheses, is with block quotes. So those, but then We do partial quotes, which is when you're choosing and you're choosing an exact phrase, but you don't want the author's entire sentence, but you really like the way they phrased something in particular, and so you want to use, could be 2 words, it could be 10 words, but it's not a complete sentence. But you want to embed that phrase in your own sentence. That's a partial quote. Okay, and but that still gets quotation marks. Now, a paraphrase, I tend to think of paraphrases as like translations. Because you know how you take, if you've ever taken a foreign language class, when you're translating from one language into the other, you have to break down the original language kind of word for word. So you know what each individual word means. But when you put it into English, you can't necessarily have each word in the exact same order. That is because the syntax for other languages is going to be different than the syntax that we use in English. And there will be things, there will be words that have a, in another language, that have more of a meaning than, we don't have a single word that's the equivalent. We have to actually explain what the word means and the concept is, not just a single word. So, but that's basically, and a lot of times paraphrases are actually longer than the original. Maybe not extensively longer, but a similar length or maybe a little bit longer because of that necessity of having to explain maybe what certain words mean, that there's not a direct translation. Well, here when we're going from paraphrasing a quote into our own words, yeah, there might be a word or two here or there that is, especially if you are including something like statistics. This is, the paraphrase idea is where we can use, incorporate things like statistics and specific facts, but not have to put them in quotation marks, because we're basically discussing the, explaining the idea, and we're explaining what this particular author said. So, for example, when we're setting up, like especially like the intro and context area part of that context or that introductory context, basically explaining like why is this argument important, relevant, and who is out there talking about it. So, if we want to say, well, this particular author says this, well, we can basically explain what their main position is in whatever source that we're reading. That's more like a paraphrase. We take their thesis statement and then try to put it in our own words. But we're basically saying, and we're stating in our sentence, this is what this person says. Okay. A lot of times we think about paraphrasing. I mean, my first exposure to paraphrasing was, I remember like in Bible class or in Sunday school, of talking about the difference between an actual translation of the Bible versus a paraphrase, because we have a lot of both. It's like you've got the NIV, the ES, the New International Version, you've got the American Standard, you have English Standard Version, there are so many different translations where they've gone back to the original language and tried to put it into English. That goes all the way back to like Wycliffe, centuries ago. But then you have things like the Living Bible. You have, there was a thing back in, what is it, the late 80s, early 90s, where they tried to take scripture and turn it into a novel. So they took out books of the Bible, they took out chapters, verses, and just made it where it looked and read like a novel. It was an interesting concept. Parts of the Bible are a lot more narrative than others, and so it works a lot better with parts of the Bible than it does with others. But they're like in biblical studies, I mean, that's the thing. You want to rely more on translation. If you're really wanting to like dig down and do exegesis about this is what the scripture really means, we want to look at the translations and compare translations, go back to the Greek and Hebrew if we can, and do that. we wouldn't want to rely on the paraphrase. The paraphrase is basically just, in a sense, trying to take something and make it more accessible to a less knowledgeable audience. A lot of times it uses much simpler language. You can maybe think of it like dumbing it down a little bit. Yeah. So there is a place for paraphrase. There can, especially, remember we looked at that one example of just the first couple paragraphs of that algae scientific report, research report that we looked at, that was so incredibly technical. You can, if that was just the intro, you can imagine what the main body of that one is probably going to look like as far as technical language goes. That would be something that if I were going to wind up quoting something from the body, that I would probably have to paraphrase it. I'd have to translate it into something more accessible for it to be really useful in my paper. Okay, so that's paraphrasing. Summarizing is basically taking broad view. You take large amount of information, try to condense it down into something fairly short. So that's where, like I said, especially in this intro context part that we're going to be working on at the beginning, getting started this week, is basically what we're doing is a shortened version of what in a much longer thesis, like what I do with the honors thesis, what you do for maybe in college, like if you had take a, some colleges these days are moving toward, if you're in an honors program, they definitely have some kind of a senior project that is like a thesis. Some schools are actually having all of their graduating seniors do something like a capstone project or something along those lines, to basically demonstrate overall, this is everything I've learned in college kind of idea. But those much longer works always include something called a literature review. It's like, here is a review of what everybody else is saying. And it's totally expository. There's no argument in that part. It's just saying, okay, here's the other voices. You've got this group of people over here who are taking this position, and you've got this group of people over here who are taking this position, and then you've got these scattering of people in the middle, and this is what they're emphasizing. This is the main thing they're focusing on when they talk about this subject. And so you're just kind of giving this big picture. We're doing that in this intro context section at the beginning of our paper, but just on a much smaller scale, okay? So if you have found a particular source that you think is either really captures, really represents a particular, maybe a particular group of voices that are arguing a particular position, that they represent that group really, really well, or maybe you found somebody who seems to be a real authority, maybe it's even a well-known name, or somebody from a really strong authoritative background that got a high, very, very high level of ethos, maybe what you want to do is give that position, that person's perspective or their argument, give them their own paragraph and basically say, okay, according to such and so, this is, or on one side of the spectrum, on one side of the argument, you have people like so-and-so who say, and then you basically are summarizing the argument that that group makes or that person makes, okay? So that's kind of a good place for story. Now, sometimes summaries can be much shorter, like if there's just one particular point or you want to basically give us information about one particular person's research or one organization's research kind of idea. Well, you may have had an entire article that talks about their research in detail, but you only want to hit the highlights. You want to break that down and say, okay, I'm just going to give the highlights, so I'm going to condense this down into maybe 3-4 sentences about this. So that's the kind of thing that we're wanting to do. Now, most when you get later on into the paper, you might have more of the direct quotes, but especially here at this beginning when you're setting up the context and trying to give us the big picture of what is the argument, like what is it that people are arguing about when it comes to this particular topic, what are people's concerns and who's concerned about it, That's when we're wanting to kind of use this, kind of maybe paraphrasing and summarizing more in this first part, maybe than later parts of the paper. So yeah, they give some really, in the chapter, when you go through and read chapter 20, they give you some really very good, very practical suggestions as far as how to handle that. They give you some really, really good examples. Like they've got one place where they give a passage from a particular author's book, and then they put it side by side with a student's paraphrase of it, so you can kind of see the difference between that. When to quote, yeah, and sometimes that can sometimes be the tricky part. Like especially when we start getting into, like when I start looking over your rough drafts, a lot of times that's a fairly common comment that I wind up having on students' papers, is that where I'll say, well, instead of quoting, you need to summarize and connect. That it's more not just, it's like the equivalent, like if you're going in and like introducing or doing an interview or something and people start name dropping, like they're just trying to impress people by dropping names of people they know without, and there may or may not actually be a relationship with that person. Oh yeah, I know so-and-so. Kind of idea. Well, we don't want to do that. Sometimes just dropping quotes in there without setting up the quote and then without explaining how the quote is connected with everything else that you're trying to say, it has that kind of gets the perception. It's like you're trying to drop these quotes in there to impress somebody by how much you're quoting, but there's not a reason for why the quote is there. Okay, you gotta make the connection. So it's got a lot of really, really great advice on how to do that. Especially pay attention to the part. There's a couple of pages here, like right, I think it's right toward the end of the chapter. That's actually more right in the middle. They talk about framing materials you borrow with signal words and introductions. And this is basically looking at, okay, when I'm going to introduce, whether it's a summary, a paraphrase, or a quote, how can I set this up? And it's using word, like introductory words, like according to noted primatologist Jane Goodall, different ways that you can use phrases like that. They've got a whole bunch of verbs. There's a whole list of like 40 verbs that you can use instead of saying said, so that you don't have to use the same speaker tag over and over and over again. There's advises, argues, claims, observes. There's so many, but then a lot of these verbs also help you set up, like especially in this beginning section, like when you're bridging that gap between, well, this person, this person I researched, this source said this, but then this source said this, this source said this on this side. So you're trying to establish that contrast. You can use verbs like, well, this researcher says this, but then this researcher acknowledges that. Like if you want to say the two authors agree with each other, you can use confirms, that this author confirms what this other research already showed. Or somebody, this person is criticizing this person, so-and-so criticizes or disagrees, disputes. I mean, there's a ton of possible verbs we can use to go into that. So then it talks about establishing context, reviewing the literature on this subject. And then the last thing I really want you to pay attention to, there's a section right toward the end, it's called avoiding patch writing. And this is, I see happen like when I do, usually like when I work with like freshmen, that tends to be a real problem, that they want to just like drop in block quote after block quote after block quote, and then they put like one sentence of their own writing in between the two, and it's just chunk, 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 chunk. And you can't do that. Okay, that's patch writing. You've got patches that are barely stitched together by a single sentence here and there. Remember, this whole thing, 80% of this is supposed to be you talking. The other 20% is supposed to be like sources where they're, and that's not necessarily direct quotes, not 20% direct quotes. 20% being direct quotes, summarizing, paraphrasing. Like most of this is supposed to be you explaining what you've learned, what you observed, what the connections that you've made, and then what conclusions you've come to. Okay? So it doesn't have to be exactly 80-20, but definitely far more of your voice happening in this paper than hearing other people's voices. Okay? All right, so that's what you're looking for when you're reading 20. There's no writing assignment, no journal, or anything that goes with that. Just read it to go with that. And then, like I said, we've got 2 weeks and two. So, yeah, I think it says in Canvas, it says 3 pages each. If we can do 2 to 3 for each of these, try to get over 2 at least. We definitely want to get that intro context session. See, and I put 2 to 3 because depending on your topic, that may take longer. And depending on like how many different voices and positions you've come up with in your research that you want to talk about, there could be some variation on that. And then we also need to leave a little room for our editing of what are we going to need to add in after we've peer edited next time. So that's why I'm kind of putting that into the 2 to 3 page, because that intro context section should absolutely not go over 4 pages in the final the final paper. Should definitely not go over 4. So that's the part that we're trying for that first part. And then that one, the intro context session, I'd like you to get that done this week so that like over the weekend or whatever, you can go, so I can go ahead and do some editing on that and give you feedback on that first part right away while you're continuing to work on getting your argument going, setting up your thesis and your position, and getting started into your first section of your outline for the argument part. And so hopefully that part will be able to come back on the 20th, when we get back on the 22nd, we'd be able to peer edit that. Okay. So like I said, there is a little bit of flexibility there in exactly how much, but definitely are hoping to at least get started on that argument by the time we're back. Okay. So anyway, that's kind of where we're going with that. And that also get by the making sure that I have something, even if you're not completely finished with your intro contest, whatever you've got on 315, go ahead and send it to me so that I have something to work with. Because the thing is I want to have some spring break too. And so I don't want to be having to grade every single day over spring as things trickle in. So if you could just say whatever is done on the 15th, go ahead and send it to me, and then I'll try to get that back to you as soon as I can. I do have to be out of town for just a couple of days in there in the middle, but I should be able to get that to you. And I'm not expecting that would be revised or anything by the time we're back on the 22nd by any means. I just want, that's more, you get it to me by the 15th, I make sure I have it back to you by the 22nd. So you've got that. That's why the 15th deadline is, so that I can get it back to you. All right. So any questions about what that intro and context is supposed to be about? Is that pretty clear?
Yeah, that's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's the big umbrella part. Okay, this is the issue that you've chosen. This is kind of its relevance, a little bit of like, why is this a problem, or why is this something that there can be a little bit of personal in there. Why, in particular, if you've got a personal investment in this topic, of a reason why you are interested in this topic in particular, if you want to, that can definitely come into this intro part. It's probably the intro part of this is probably the that and the very conclusion at the end are really the only two places that I might allow a little bit of first person to sneak in, where you might be able to actually use an I or two. Definitely in the body of your argument, we're going to try to avoid it like the plague. But yeah, and especially the ref draft. If there's some I, so if you need to you put some I statements in there during the ref draft stage just to help keep you on track, I'm totally okay with that. We can weed out the I statements later if we need to. That's really not a problem. We're going to have plenty of opportunities to peer edit and be editing because we're going to take this through multiple drafts along the way. Okay, practicalities. Is there anything that you guys have run into this week, either site, like bibliography-wise for your sources that we need to go over? I covered what to do if you decide you want to do a block quote.
It's not that big of a deal, but there's like, for one of my citations, it only would let me do like a really huge link. Would that go in?
Okay. Yeah. That would definitely, you'd have to do copy and paste the whole stinking thing, into the bibliography at the end. But what you got, it looks like you have an author name at the beginning.
Yeah. I just put that there so I knew which
one. Yeah. So the author name at the beginning of that is the only thing that would actually go in the parentheses.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I know I wouldn't say that whole thing in the paper.
You wouldn't believe how many times I've had students that want to that start plugging in the entire URL that long, and start trying to plug that into the middle of the middle of their essay.
But so I will put this
into the works the works cited annotated bibliography. Yeah.
Other than that, no. But I mean, I might need a refresher on how to indent because I completely forgot.
Okay, how to do the hanging indent?
Yeah.
Okay, so which word processing do you use? Google Docs, Word?
Docs.
Okay. I'll probably just sit down and walk through it because at this point I've done the Google Docs one so many times I have that one memorized, and I know Pages because that's the one I use most often. But I can I'm less familiar with Word, but I can definitely show you exactly. Usually it's under format. Go under format, then look for indent. But I know that there's a way to do it just through the toolbar. But I usually have to refresh my memory of actually looking at it to show you how to get there.
I found it. I remembered. Okay.
You got it. Yeah. Very good. The whole hanging indent thing is... It's formatting wise, it's really nice that they actually have a way to set that already in the programming, in the word processing program, that it'll do it for you, because having to do it the old-fashioned way where you get to the end of the line and then you have to hard return, indent, but then if you make a mistake and you have to change something later, then it messes up all the formatting and you have to go back and you just have to redo it and start formatting from the beginning. It's like back when the first research paper I did, my teacher was making us do footnotes at the bottom of the page on a typewriter. So you had to estimate, okay, how much space is this going to take me at the bottom of my page? So I need to make sure that I stop typing the paragraph early enough that I have room to put the footnote down at the bottom without running out of margin. Oof. It was awful. Word processing is so much better.
Formatting is my greatest enemy.
Format on
everything.
On everything in the formatting, right. Well, that's one that's nice. I mean, you've got that... setting things up, as you're writing this week, you've got that section in the book where it's talking about the MLA. Where's the MLA run? Yeah, so starting on 327, it shows you exactly how to set all your margins, exactly what the first page is supposed to look like. And also, it will really, really help me that even this very, very first part of the ref draft that you're doing, that you go ahead and put the heading with your last name and the page number at the top. So that way, because a lot of times what I wind up doing with these papers is I'll have to make references back to maybe a note that I made earlier, or I'll like connect back to paragraph 2, page 3. Okay, so to where I'm referring to other things that happened. And if you've got the page numbers already there, that helps me a lot and gives me a shortcut of how I can tell you, but yeah, go back and connect this with that other part of something else that you said earlier, or that kind of thing. To show those connections.
Is there a title page for this one?
There will be a title page, but I'm going to have you do, like, eventually we're going to do, when we do the title page, I'll have you do, like, the title page and formal outline on a separate document, because those are not supposed to have page numbers. The page number starts with the first page of the actual text. If we put a cover page on it, that's going to be no page number. So it works better if you just do it as a separate file. And then when you upload it if you need to upload it as a PDF to someplace, and you can do this at college too, because once you've got it in PDF form, so I've got a PDF of my title page, and then I've got the PDF of everything else that is numbered. You can merge the two and drop that first page in at the beginning, and then you've got, because at that point so it won't automatically start trying to put a page number on page one. Because you can do, I mean, there are certain formats that you can, that call for you not to have a page number on page one, that you start, it's counting, but it's not visible on page one. So you go, page one doesn't have anything up there in the corner, but page two will have page two up in the corner. And you can set it that way, but I have never found a way in any of the word processing programs where they will let you do a title page that is not numbered at all, and then start page two with the number one.
Seems like an oversight.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting that they not at the college level. I want you to do a cover page because I want you to know how to do a cover page. Different professors will do different things. Some of them just want it. They want that heading with the name, class, teacher, due date, page number. They want a title, everything just starting on page one and keep going from there. But there are some professors that they want to grade. They want to do what's called blind grading. They want your name only on a separate title page. And then when you get to page one, you just start off with title and start writing. You don't have that heading with your name up in the corner, and you don't put your last name with the page number, because what they'll do is before they'll maybe have an assistant or somebody flip that back page, that the title page that has your name on it, they'll have that flipped over to where they don't see your name at all. They have no idea who wrote it until they finish completely grading. And then they flip the top back over and find out who actually wrote the paper. So, yeah. So blind grading is a thing. That's one of the reasons, like at the college level, sometimes they'll still have handwritten essay exams using what's called a blue book. And a blue book is basically, it's about the same size as our Write for College book, but it's like a piece of blue paper on the front that has a place for your name, class, date. And then inside, it's just a bunch of like lined pages. But that way, it's been done for forever. I mean, really, really, because as a way to, it's kind of an anti-cheating thing. That like you'd have, I know it's, I never had to do this, but I know it's done at a lot of state universities still, like where you have like several hundred people in a class, like a freshman English class. And what they do is everybody has to turn in a blank blue book that has no names on it, so it has to be completely, totally blank. And then they get randomly redistributed to everybody in the class, so you don't actually get to use the blue book that you brought into the classroom. You get one randomly from somebody else that somebody put into the pile. And again, so that way you can't like subtly put cheat inside your blue book. And then it all has to be handwritten, so you're not using some kind of computer or whatever, you're having to handwrite the whole thing. And then it's also, you never put your name on the inside of the book. Your name is only on the outside of the blue book. So again, professor wraps it around, shuffles everything, so they're grading all the tests without knowing actually who. So it's like the whole idea, eliminate any favoritism or assumptions, like, oh, so-and-so wrote this, it must be good, so I don't have to read it very closely. So it prevents that kind of thing. So yeah, there's still a lot of schools that do that. There are more schools that are moving toward either a testing center kind of model, or where have any of you taken the TSI over at ACC? Like where you go into like their admissions and they have their computers there and you sit, at least that's what my daughters had to do when they were doing their TSI. But then that was pre-COVID, so they may have changed it.
It was completely online for me.
Completely online?
Yeah. But you had to have like your camera on and like they had to see that you were in front of the camera. So
right.
You couldn't use the bathroom at all until like they gave you like a designated
time.
It was very attentive to detail still.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, that was
good. Well, it's an attempt to make sure that you're writing it yourself, you're not walking away and trying to get
mm-hmm.
help and like cutting and pasting and just yeah. So again, this part of anti-cheating measures. So yeah, that kind of stuff it's moving that way, where the more and more tests are being able to be taken online. But how to do that, like to make sure that, like sometimes they'll say, well, you have to use this particular program that, and there's no way that you can get out of that program to like go research anything or access notes or anything like that you have to do it. You know, yeah, so it does, and that's why like testing centers, you're not allowed to bring anything into the testing center besides you, and you sit down at their computer kind of thing to take it. So that's something that is being used as well. Okay. Well, the other thing they wanted to do today was basically for class today, what we were doing was continuing to work on annotated bibliography and working on outline and working outline, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I want to do individual coverages, come and check in with each one of you individually to see where you are, what you've gotten done this week. And and then you get the last 45 minutes of class to be working on whatever you need to be working on. And that way I'm here if you have questions about that. So, all right. So for Caleb, I can go ahead and turn the recording off and you can listen to this. And then you and I can email back and forth about how you've done this week.